is to start from full 3 plus 1 decomposition and derive the cosmological perturbation equations, but not in the gauge invariant way. Like, we haven't fixed any gauge, variables are still floating, and we will pass to gauge invariant variables very soon. But if you have any questions so far about the technique which we have used, like any fundamental questions, like, you should ask now, because then we will just assume these equations have been done and we will go to the next stage of trying to understand their physics. So shall I assume most of the things are clear? Okay. So we derived various equations yesterday, especially like from 41 to 44. And I also gave you an exercise for homework, but I realized maybe some of the students have already done that. So was it straightforward? Or okay, so do you want another exercise for homework, or you want to continue the previous homework? Because this was officially your homework, which I deliberately made light, because I realized some students have not done the previous exercises. So what do you want? You want more exercises, or you want to spend time in understanding what has been done? Or okay, so another easy one or straightforward one I can try to give. So what we are going to do now is to understand today gauge transformations. And the reason for that is that, as I was mentioning to you yesterday, that we have derived all these very nice equations just from the 3 plus 1 decomposition. But what one can do is to just change the coordinates, and one may get different answers. So let us see how that happens. So we want to study the role of gauge transformations. And this will tell us why some of the variables which we introduced, they are important, like this chi and kappa. This will automatically tell us in what variables we should write the perturbation equations, so that if I write them in one in gauge invariant variables, and you can just assume all of my physical predictions are going to be correct, even if you change the coordinates. Okay, so this will guide us towards that. So you want to study the role of the coordinate transformations, and the idea is that we start with some background. So let us say we are given some metric G mean U on X and some proper time tau. And I'm given some matter content, which is, let us say, some rho bar. I will denote the background values by bar in today's lecture, P bar and so on. And also I have some H bar, which is the Hubble rate and so on. So I have a fixed background. The only change I want to make, so I'm fixed with my matter content, I'm fixed with my metric. The only change I want to make is to go to another coordinate system, X, let us say X tilde. So I'm in X coordinate system here, and I want to go to some X tilde or X prime coordinate system, such that my metric tensor in this will be something of X tilde. Let us call it X and X tilde here. Okay? And we want to understand that if the background is same, the background is same, only coordinates have changed in this background. Everything else is same. The matter content is same. Okay? We are just writing it in a different coordinate system. We want to understand what change. So suppose if I compute, write down in this full inhomogeneous space-time, I can write down this G tilde mu nu as G tilde mu nu as, let us say, X tilde, as some G mu nu bar tilde plus delta of G mu nu tilde. So what I want to say is that, okay, let me go slowly. So here, this is the full metric, and we can extract the background part, which is G bar mu nu x, and delta G mu nu is the perturbation over it. Okay, and I do a coordinate transformation of this fixed background, and I can also extract the perturbation in this new coordinate system. I want to ask the question, how different is this from this entity? I want to ask, if I have some perturbation given to me in one frame, in one coordinate system, and if I change the coordinate system, how does the perturbation gets affected? That is the aim of today's exercise. Once we understand that, then we'll understand what are the gauge invariant variables we have to choose for perturbations. Okay? Once we'll understand how the perturbation gets affected, what is the difference between delta G mu nu tilde minus delta G mu nu? And we'll compute it explicitly now. Okay? So let me explain it to you in more detail what we are trying to do. So we are going to start with some coordinates x mu, which are these in this system. X mu, we start with this. And we are going to take a coordinate transformation to, let us say, x tilde mu. And then you will get, which is essentially an infinitesimal transformation epsilon mu, where epsilon mu is a function of x and tau. And in this lecture, so far we didn't put anything with the lapse. But in this lecture, just to make the physical insights more clear, I'm going to put n naught everywhere equal to 1, which we didn't do. So we have derived all the fundamental equations with keeping the lapse free. But now we are going to go more towards the conventional notation. So just for simplicity, you can also take n naught equal to a. You can just keep n naught. Everything remains the same. I'm just doing this because it may help some people to understand it properly. So that this tau is the proper time when n naught is 1. Otherwise it was not. So now, under this kind of transformation, if I want to find what is g tilde mu nu of x tilde, then we know it from the GR course. This is just g alpha beta, delta x alpha, delta x tilde mu, delta x beta, delta x tilde nu. Okay? And now we can compute it in two lines. And you can compute it and you will get the answer that this is g bar mu nu in x. So in x and x and tau, let us say. Let me suppress this tau with x, okay? Like it means it is x mu, this x. And then you will get delta g mu nu x. And then you will get two terms. One is minus epsilon alpha mu g bar alpha nu, and then you will get minus epsilon beta nu g bar mu beta from this coordinate transformation. Okay, you just have to substitute this equation here. You just have to compute these derivatives from here and take till the first order. The important thing to remember is this epsilon is a first-order perturbation. It's like a first-order perturbation itself. It's a very small, it's an infinitesimal quantity. It's just like we have two coordinate systems like we do in the Taylor series, right? Like we have an x and x prime, and we are just expanding a function. This is what we'll do in a few lines also. Like we are just looking at the neighborhood of this coordinate x, okay? It's not a big transformation. It's an infinitesimal transformation. It's a very small. So this is what relates g tilde mu nu x in x tilde coordinates with the metric in the x coordinates. So now we can also, so this is the equation which we need, one equation. So we can also write like this, what I was writing here. We can perturb this. We can write that g tilde mu nu in x tilde coordinates is some background metric g bar mu nu in x tilde coordinates plus delta G mu nu. Tilde in x tilde coordinates. Okay, and I'm writing this without tilde because the background is the same. It is just in different coordinates, x tilde. That's our assumption. The background is same. We are just changing the coordinates. Okay? So now, once we have done this, we can write down this quantity, g bar mu nu x tilde, approximately in the first order, as g bar mu nu in x plus delta x alpha g bar mu nu alpha in x. This is just like the Taylor's theorem applied to tensors. Okay, we are just expanding in the neighborhood x tilde. So you will get this. So now we have all the terms which we need. So the important thing is we have the fixed background. The background is not changing. Okay, we have the fixed matter content. We are just doing the coordinate transformation, and we want to understand how the things change. So let us write down this side now, the left-hand side of equation 1, using these two equations. So if I write down this LHS of 1, then we will get g bar mu nu x. So I first write down this in terms of this, and then this in terms of this. So I will get first this term, g bar mu nu x plus delta x alpha g bar mu nu alpha x. And then I will get this term, which is delta of g tilde mu nu x tilde. And this will be equal to all this. This will be equal to g bar mu nu x plus delta of g mu nu x and minus epsilon alpha mu g bar alpha nu minus epsilon beta nu g bar mu beta. This is the equation which we need. So now in this equation, we see that we have a common background in the same coordinates on the both sides. That goes away. And we wanted how to relate the perturbation in x tilde coordinate with the perturbation in x coordinate. This is what we wanted. Right? So now we can write that equation. So we will get our answer, that delta of g tilde mu nu in x tilde minus delta of g mu nu in x is equal to minus of g bar mu nu alpha epsilon alpha, and then the other two terms, minus g bar alpha nu of epsilon alpha mu minus g bar mu alpha epsilon alpha nu. So this equation tells us, if I start with one background with fixed matter content, and you do a coordinate transformation, you write down the same background with same matter content in different coordinate system, what is the effect on perturbation in your metric tensor compared to the perturbation in my metric tensor due to the coordinate transformation? This is this equation which is going to give us the answer. It relates the perturbation in your background and the perturbation in my background. So it is not zero. So if somebody writes down the perturbation equations which we just wrote down yesterday, and somebody says like, okay, you do in one coordinate system, I do in another coordinate system, we are going to get the same answer. The answer is negative, because all these terms are non-zero a priori on this side. If this was zero, then we would have been very happy, and then our story would have ended there itself. But now we have to search for these gauge invariant variables, which will be invariant under these transformations. And then we'll write the cosmological perturbation equations in terms of those variables. That will be just recasting. We don't have to do any further calculation. We'll just identify the variable and rewrite in that variable. It's not like we have to take another Li derivative or anything. Okay. So is this clear what we are doing? Yes.
Why is no Tinker as the equation two for the G mu nu bar?
Sorry?
G mu nu
this one?
Yes.
Because the background is same. That's the assumption.
But wouldn't you usually require that G bar tilde of X tilde is equal to G bar of X? Like that, rather than that G bar tilde is equal to G bar.
Sorry?
As a function.
Can you repeat it?
Wouldn't you usually have a tilde on there?
Yeah.
And have that being equal to G bar of X? No, isn't that how you... That's kind of what I would expect.
Sorry, what I can't understand.
So
you're saying that...
The tilde function on the tilde coordinates is equal to the original function on the original coordinates.
So the assumption which we are... All this is under the assumption that the background which I take and you take is the same background. That is why you can replace the G bar tilde. It's still in different coordinates because it's an X tilde.
Yeah.
And it is related to the X the way you are saying. It is not that this is equal to G bar mu nu of X. This is not.
But if it had a tilde on top. Because if you were applying the same function to a different coordinate, you're changing the background.
The background is fixed. Like when we mean by fixed background, the matter content is fixed. Okay?
Yeah.
So think like this, that you are given fixed energy density, it doesn't change.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the metric perturbations, and you're given the fixed pressure. So if you're given that, you know by background equations that you will get the same Hubble parameter and the same scale factor.
Yeah,
just
sure.
In different coordinates.
I don't think it should change, but I think if you're saying in one case that the background is G bar of X, and in the other case that the background is G bar of X tilde, those two things are different. So you have changed the background.
The background, well, the G bar X tilde is related to G bar in X with this way.
But then it's not the same.
Yeah, okay, what do you want to say?
Yes, I think I have the same question to it. So G, let's get this straight. So X is an element of like some Euclidean space, like R3?
At the moment,
like
no.
We have the space-time manifold.
Yeah.
And X is, like you have a coordinate map that takes like elements of R3 to the space manifold.
So X mu is a full space-time coordinates.
What?
X mu
yeah.
is the full space-time coordinate.
Right. So is it a list of numbers or is it a point on space?
You can think in different ways.
Right,
at the moment, it's some point in the manifold.
A point in the manifold.
Yeah.
Okay. So those G's are functions on the manifold. They're not functions on Euclidean space.
These G's are the functions on the space-time manifold. This is a metric tensor on the manifold.
Okay. All right.
I guess the question is, why are we only considering infinitesimal? Diffeomorphisms, because you could imagine that you and I could use an equivalent background, but if I do a crazy change of variables, which has nothing to do with, like perturbation theory, the perturbation can be small, but I don't see why the change of variables has to be small.
Yeah, so I don't know the immediate answer for that, but at the moment what we are doing is just to study the gauge transformations, and they require that we take this epsilon to be infinitesimal.
Okay?
Okay?
So that's
that is what we are interested in.
That's why you're taking the backgrounds to actually.
Yeah, that is the problem which we want to study. We are given a fixed background, okay? We are just writing in different coordinates, so they will be related with these coordinates in this particular way. But what we want to understand is that under these change of coordinate systems, how do the perturbations change in these two backgrounds? Yes?
Okay, I think what's confusing me is, so you said X is a point in the manifold?
Sorry?
You said X and X tilde are both points in the manifold.
So think of them, so we are given some manifold labeled by X mu's, and we have a metric tensor which depends on these X mu's. Think just in this way.
They're labeled by X mu's.
Yeah.
Okay, so X mu's are lists of numbers in R, and X mu is three numbers.
Yeah, you can think in that way also.
Okay, right. Okay, good. So that means, so you're writing like G mu nu of X, for example, right? So that means G mu nu is a function that takes in three numbers and spits out one component of the metric tensor.
So G mu nu depends. So G mu nu is a metric tensor on this manifold. And if I give you some lapse and shift, and you can write down the full components of G mu nu, they will be different in both the coordinate systems. Because in principle, your lapse and shift can be different.
Yeah.
In principle.
But
what we are doing is we are taking the same background, but we are just writing in different coordinate systems. That's different from completely general change.
Right, yes, you're writing, so G mu nu is a function that depends on the coordinate system, yes?
Yeah.
You're writing it in a coordinate system. Okay, so I think what was confusing us is that, so the coordinate systems like x tilde and x could have like different coordinates, right?
In principle it could be very different, but what we are doing is just an infinitesimal transformation.
What
we are doing is an infinitesimal transformation. They can in principle be very different, but we are not doing that full general case.
Alright, so yeah. Okay. So what was confusing is like if you take the general case where the domains can be different,
yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to write, for example, G mu nu bar of x tilde.
Yeah.
Because x tilde does not fall into the domain.
Yeah, absolutely. So in general, it may not fall.
Yes.
But what we are doing is just an infinitesimal transformation on those coordinates. It's just in the neighborhood of that x. Mm-hmm. And that's an assumption that it falls under this.
So why, but still, like, I can't quite see why it makes sense. Like, even if we can, even if the domains happen to overlap,
yeah.
Why does it make sense to talk about g mu nu of x tilde? Like, shouldn't we be doing some translating of coordinate systems? Like, if we want
which we have done here. So I write down g tilde mu nu of x tilde.
Okay.
Okay?
Right, okay.
And I was given this g alpha beta of x, and I wrote the full coordinate transformations. This epsilon is very small. This is not full general. Okay? I'm just taking to the first order, so I get this equation. We have done that. Okay? Now the next step is that how to write this g tilde mu nu in x tilde in terms of g bar mu nu of x and extract the perturbation. That's what we are doing. So we are doing what you are saying, but assuming that this is infinitesimal transformation.
Where did equation 2 come from? I'm sorry.
The equation 2 is the statement that I can write down g tilde. This is the full inhomogeneous metric. And I'm writing in terms of a background.
Okay.
And the perturbation.
Why is that? Like, so you have.
That's what we are doing. We are assuming that whenever we are given in space.
Sorry. Like, take that equation and there's an equation directly to the left of it, which is like what you're saying sounds to me like the equation to the left. G tilde mu nu equals g tilde mu nu background plus delta g tilde mu nu.
Yeah, maybe if you just erase that tilde over there, we'll be happier.
Okay, let's do that. Well, because at the moment I was not assuming anything here. But we are considering like this.
So you're defining the perturbation to include any differences that come sort of from
yeah. You can think in that way.
Okay.
Okay? But I think like this is a very important piece of the assumption. And I understand like this can be confusing. So the first step is this is just an infinitesimal coordinate transformation. This is not arbitrary transformation, which you are doing on the coordinates. And the second thing is that we are assuming that the background is fixed. It's just written in different coordinates. Okay? That is the only thing we are going to do. Okay, so let us go ahead with trying to extract some physics from this equation. So as I said, like we are taking n not equal to 1. And if we take n not equal to 1, then in the background, which we are working with, we had a g bar 0, 0, which was minus n naught square, which is equal to minus 1 now. So we are working now with the FRW. So we'll have g bar 0 I equal to 0. And then we have g bar ij, which is equal to a squared gamma ij. So this is just the FRW metric, which we have. Okay, so I hope this is clear. So this is just our FRW metric, which is equation 19 in Bardeen's work. I'm just going to put n not equal to 1 all through. now. Okay. And now let us first compute from this equation what is the change in the perturbations coming from the spatial metric. Okay, just the Gij part, not the G mu nu, the full G mu nu. So if we do that, so let us do it. So let us write down the Gij components of this. So this will be delta of G bar ij. So what I'm going to do is I am going to use now, just assume the notation that whenever I write tilde, it is in x tilde. If I don't write a tilde on a tensor, it is in x. I'm just going to suppress this x tilde and x now. Okay? It will, G tilde means it is in x tilde, because this is the only quantity sitting here in x tilde. So I want to compute delta of G tilde minus ij minus delta of Gij. So we can see from here. So let us go back to what was delta of Gij. So we learned that Gij, the full Gij, is a square gamma ij plus 2a square gamma ij phi plus 2a square di dj gamma. Right? This is the perturbation in the spatial part, which we learned. And then what the delta Gij is just this part. Since a square and a squares, they are same. Like since we have the fixed background, rows and p's are also same. What this means, delta g bar tilde ij minus delta gij, is that we are just looking at 2a square gamma ij delta of phi. When I write this from here, what it means is that I'm just looking at delta phi part here. Okay? Is it clear what we want to do? Okay? So now let us compute this expression for delta of Gij. Okay. So from this equation, so now let us do it systematically. So delta of G bar ij minus delta of Gij. We know the left-hand side. That left-hand side is equal to this. This is what we want to find. So if we do this, we will have various terms. We will have terms like minus G bar. So let us substitute just ij here. So we have minus G bar ij. And then we will have the first term. Let us do it slowly. G bar ij alpha epsilon alpha. And then we will have minus G bar alpha j epsilon alpha I. And then we'll have minus G bar I alpha epsilon alpha j. And then we can just sum over these alphas everywhere and use the fact that G bar 0 I is 0 in the background from here. So you will get various terms. You will get G bar I j 0, epsilon 0. You will get G bar I j. Okay, let me write down some terms first. So you'll get, first of all, G bar I j 0, epsilon 0. You'll get minus G bar I j sum k, epsilon k. I'm just taking out the temporal and the spatial parts. Okay? And then you will get similarly many terms here. So G bar ij comma k is 0 because a square only depends on time. So these such terms will disappear. Similarly here, so this will be 0, for example. Similarly here, you will have G bar 0 j epsilon 0 I. And then you will have minus G bar ij epsilon ji, and similarly some terms from here, two terms from here. So this term is also 0 because the background has G bar 0 I equal to 0. So many terms will disappear. So eventually what you will get, if you just do this calculation, and if you just substitute the things is that you will get minus 2 AA dot gamma ij epsilon 0, and then you will get minus A square gamma kj epsilon ki minus A square gamma ki epsilon kj. That's so when I write k, it only means a spatial component like ijk, and 0 is 0. So this is what you will get. And now what we are going to consider, since we have chosen n not equal to 1, so we are going to consider, we are going to say that epsilon 0, which was our transformation in the temporal part, is given by some capital T. This is our label, okay? And the epsilon I or epsilon K, whatever you wish, is of a particular form, that it is given by the gradient of a scalar quantity. This is very important. This is the, you can think of it again as a assumption, but it is consistently required if you want to do scalar perturbations, that the spatial the spatial coordinate transformation should be written in terms of a scalar like this. Okay, you can try to do more general thing, but you will not do scalar perturbations. You will go outside the scalar perturbation regime. Okay, so we will take this. This is our whole of epsilon mu. You can take this as a definition we are going to consider for scalar perturbations. Okay, so if you do this, if you plug in all this here, what you get is that this term, which we want to compute, is actually equal to, you have to plug in and you have to play with some equations, and you will easily get this is minus 2a square di. Oh, sorry, I made a big mistake here. There is another term. So this was just one term. So we wanted to compute delta g bar ij minus delta gij. So there is a delta phi term, but there is also this term, right? You should stop me when I don't write terms. So plus 2a square di dj, this is essentially delta gamma, or delta of this. It doesn't matter where this delta is. So this is the left-hand side. And if you compute this, the right-hand side just comes out to be 2a square gamma ij. It just comes out to be 2aa dot, which will come from here. Gamma ij of minus 2aa dot, gamma ij of t. And minus 2a square di dj of gamma. So this is the answer which you will get from this calculation. So now you can identify from here how does delta phi transforms and how does delta gamma transforms, using the fact that gamma has this property that it comes in this di dj part, the way it was defined as the scalar perturbation. And we get the answer. Sorry? Yeah, you're right. It's DIDJ actually lambda. DIDJ lambda. You're completely right. Okay? So this tells us, you can do it independently. You can, what I've done is not the way Bardeen has done in his work. I have done it slightly more generally. But what you can do is, instead of taking the temporal and spatial transformations together, you can take them separately. Temporal transformations first, or spatial transformations first, which he does, and then temporal transformations. You'll get exactly the same answer. We have done it together to save time. So what you will get from here is that delta phi actually transforms as So there is an A square. We can divide this by A. And delta phi will be minus HT, where H is the Hubble rate in proper time. And delta gamma is minus lambda. This is what you get. So which tells us that the result of this calculation for ij part for both spatial and temporal components is that phi tilde is phi minus ht and gamma tilde is gamma minus lambda. Okay? So if I do, the important thing to note is we started with this full general expression. We just restricted to the spatial metric, and we looked at its perturbation. We did temporal coordinate transformation and the spatial coordinate transformation, which is defined like this for the scalar perturbations, together. You can do it separately also, individually. And then we find that phi is only affected by temporal transformation. Phi is not affected by spatial transformation. And gamma is only affected by spatial transformation. It is not affected by temporal transformation. Okay, that is, yeah. I'm very sorry. This is just phi minus ht. Okay, so now this tells us a very important result already, which we proved, part of it which we proved earlier. So if you guys look at equation 31 of Bardeen, can people look? Equation 31 of Bardeen. So equation 31 of Bardeen is the intrinsic curvature perturbation. Okay? It's Rij. And that depends only on phi. We noted that. Somehow, miraculously, it only depended on phi. And that tells us that intrinsic curvature perturbation is gauge invariant under spatial coordinate transformations. It's already gauge invariant. We don't have to do anything there for that intrinsic curvature perturbation. And we will also show, this will be your tutorial exercise today, to show that the extrinsic curvature perturbation is also gauge invariant under spatial transformations. Okay, so let us go ahead with deriving more of these relations. So are there any questions on this? Yeah. Okay, so he has phi. So, okay, good. We should have done this. So Bardeen writes phi tilde in the same way, minus h. But he's saying n naught t, where our n naught is 1. That's it. We could have chosen n naught not equal to 1, and we would have got n naught here. Okay? The important thing to note, if you compare with various books, is they do in conformal time. So instead of when they write t, that's in conformal time. That will be very important for us in the last week. So all these results, so if you look at, so anyway, his equation 38 is independent of n naught, so we get the same equation. So all the equations which we will derive will be same if you put his n naught equal to 1. Okay, good, so let us go ahead. So now I'm going to derive the perturbation in the shift vector. So we want to find the quantity delta of g tilde I0 minus of delta of g I0. And we are just going to use the same equation here. And then we are going to use the fact that epsilon 0 is t and epsilon I is gamma ij dj lambda. Okay. So we will do this. And if you do this, we are again going to just put I and 0 in the instead of mu and nu. And you will get terms like minus g bar I 0, then an alpha, epsilon alpha, minus g bar alpha 0, epsilon of alpha I, and then a minus of g bar I alpha of epsilon of alpha 0. Okay? And so this is 0 in background, because g bar I 0 is 0 in the background. And there are these two terms which will survive. So this will have a 0, 0 component and an I 0 component. I 0 component is again 0. So only 0, 0 component will survive. So we will have a minus g bar 0, 0, epsilon 0 I. And then from here, I 0 component is 0. And only I j component will survive. So we'll have a minus g bar I j of epsilon j 0. And if you just plug in all these things, just in one line, you will get this is equal to di of t minus a square gamma ij of dj lambda dot. So beta will get transformed under both the spatial and the temporal transformations. Okay. So what Martin does is he doesn't write the beta's transformation under temporal transformations. When he writes equation 38, he has written beta only under spatial transformations. But you can also do temporal transformation, and you can find that beta also changes under temporal transformations like this. Now let us see immediately that it leads to a very nice result. So we saw that we have beta delta equal to beta minus t by a square plus lambda dot form for beta. And we also found that gamma tilde. So if I want to do just spatial transformations, just spatial, okay, only spatial, then beta tilde will be just beta plus lambda dot, which is this equation number 38 in Bardeen's paper. Okay, and if I know like under these transformations, gamma tilde is also gamma minus lambda.
Should we just go? Yeah. Gamma delta is gamma minus lambda. And now let us find how does chi, which we define, changes under these transformations. So chi was d square gamma dot plus beta, which is our definition of chi in equation 33. We are putting n not equal to 1 in equation 33 and we get this chi. So now you can easily see that if I write out chi delta, it should be this quantity, and this quantity is gauge invariant because we have gamma delta will give me gamma dot minus lambda dot, and beta will give me beta plus lambda dot. So pi is equal to pi. Pi delta is lambda. Okay? So the perturbation which we define as the trace. The traceless part of Tij, which measured the shear of the world lines, is gauge invariant under spatial coordinate transformations. Okay, so that is a nice part of the chi which we define.
But it's not invariant under time transition.
It is not invariant under time. So let us do that. And all these facts become very important when we choose particular gauges. Like there will be a reason why you choose zero shear gauge and later on the synchronous gauge and so on. And there, these statements or these facts help us a lot to choose the right gauge, knowing that what is gauge invariant and what. So what kind of slicing we should choose. So let us see about the time. How does it change under time? So under time, beta changes, so only temporal. So under time, beta tilde is beta minus t by a square. And under time, gamma doesn't change. Because gamma only changes under spatial transformations. We saw that under time, gamma doesn't change. So gamma tilde is just gamma. And so you will just compute chi tilde from here, just in one line. You will find that chi delta is chi minus t. So the perturbation in the traceless part of the extrinsic curvature, though it is invariant under the spatial transformations, it is not invariant under the temporal transformations. So by itself, it is not a fully gauge invariant variable. If it was invariant under temporal transformations also, we would have been very happy. We would have discovered a gauge invariant variable. But it turns out that it's not invariant under temporal transformations. So we have to construct something which cancels that effect. Okay, so we haven't done so far G naught naught. We have done G naught I and G I. So let us also... Yes?
Just a question about notation. Because you defined... phi tilde and gamma tilde to be gauge invariant variables, and now we're using.
Sorry, the phi tilde.
You said phi tilde and gamma tilde are.
No.
Or they're just.
No, no, I didn't say that. What I said was phi tilde is gauge invariant under spatial transformations.
Okay.
It's not gauge invariant fully.
Okay.
And gamma tilde is gauge invariant under temporal transformations. Okay. So they are mixed. They are not fully.
Okay.
Gauge. We haven't yet found a fully gauge invariant variable.
Okay.
But we are almost there now. You see. This phi tilde is gauge invariant under spatial transformations. We know that chi is gauge invariant under spatial transformations also. So if you take a gauge in which chi is zero, somehow, okay, then this phi tilde will actually become we will see that this phi tilde will become the body potential. We will just see in 5 minutes. But okay, do you want to do the G naught naught case in the tutorial or shall I do it? It is as straightforward as what we have done. Do you want to do in the class?
Tutorial.
Huh?
Tutorial.
We Will you do?
Yeah.
Okay. So I can just write the result. So let me just give you the hint for that. It is very simple. So just take the G01 part from here now. And you have a delta of G delta 00 minus of delta of G 00. And the left hand side, the left hand side will be equal to minus 2 alpha. Minus 2 of delta alpha. And the reason for that is that it is good to go back to our original notation. So we have G00 as minus n squared, which was equal to minus of n naught squared, 1 plus alpha squared. Right? This was our original quadratic notation. We are just putting n naught equal to 1. So this is just 1 plus alpha squared. And then you just expand it to the linear order. And this is just 1 plus 2 alpha. So this is just the background part. 1 is our left, so minus 1. And this is just a perturbation, 2 alpha. It was n naught, it was always our 2 n naught alpha, but n naught is now 1. Okay, so we will just have 2 minus of 2 delta alpha from here. And then we just put part everything. So g naught naught alpha, g naught naught alpha. And then you have to put g naught naught, g alpha naught. And G naught alpha and so on. So this term will give you so G naught naught alpha will give you a zero because G naught naught in the background is just minus one or one. It's just a fixed lapse. So there is no derivative acting on it. So this term will give you zero. So this term will give you two terms. Actually four terms, two terms will be zero. And then you will just get this as the right hand side when you compute it, it will be just 2 times p dot. There will be no derivative of the spatial part, spatial transformation. So you will get alpha tilde equals alpha minus p dot. That's the answer. Okay, so now let us go ahead. So this is your tutorial exercise to prove that alpha tilde is alpha minus p dot. Okay. So now let's look at another quantity, which is kappa.
Since we're dealing with first orders, does the t dot, can that derivative be taken either with respect to the tilde or the not tilde?
Some
time coordinate? Are we taking the time derivative there with respect to either coordinate? Or is
no, this is our original coordinate.
Okay.
We have written everything now in terms of the original coordinate. Remember like this, when we did this equation, everything was in x. I just suppressed that in x. Yeah. So only when I add delta, it is in x delta. Okay, so now let us do the one more exercise and we are almost there with the engineering paper. So the other quantity which we introduced was kappa. So we introduced chi, we saw why chi is very nice because it only it is gauge invariant for spatial transformations. And now let's see how does kappa react to transformations. So kappa, if you take lapse to be 1, it's minus 3 phi naught minus h alpha minus of delta of phi. So I want to find out what is kappa delta. I want to find out this quantity. And then I will just put what we found for phi delta dot. So phi tilde dot is phi dot minus h dot of t minus h of t dot. I'm just taking derivative of this expression here. And then I will have a minus of h alpha tilde, so this is minus of h alpha from here, plus h of t dot from here, and then I have chi tilde, and chi tilde we just erased with the total bar, and the chi tilde was chi minus t. It doesn't change the spatial transformation, so this is going to be just minus of delta chi plus of delta t. Okay, so these terms cancel, and you can write down the result as you can extract the kappa term again. This is phi dot h alpha delta chi, it gives us a kappa. So this is kappa plus delta t, which comes from here, and then you get an extra term, this and this. So this is plus 3 short t. This is kappa tilde. So kappa tilde also doesn't change in the spatial coordinate transformations. Or the kappa doesn't change in the spatial coordinate transformations. And when we wrote down the perturbation in the extrinsic curvature, the perturbation in extrinsic curvature was completely captured by chi and kappa. Chi was capturing the traceless part, kappa was capturing the trace part. So this proves us that the perturbation in extrinsic curvature is also invariant in the spatial phase transformations. The perturbation in intrinsic curvature was, because it clearly depended just on phi, and it proved for phi, and the perturbation in extrinsic curvature is also. So that's very nice property of both the things. So now we are ready for introducing the gauge invariant variables. This is just 2 lines, then I'll stop. So let us rewrite the expressions here. So we have, what we found was alpha delta is this. Let me just rewrite so that we all get across in what we are doing. We found that phi delta is phi minus ht. So this is your tutorial exercise, the first one. Gamma delta was gamma minus lambda. Then we found that beta delta is beta minus t by a squared plus lambda dot. Then we found that chi delta is chi minus t. And we found that kappa tilde is kappa plus delta t plus p h of t. So our original perturbations were alpha, phi, gamma, and beta, and these were the 2 quantities from the extrinsic curvature. Okay? So now it is, now we know everything, so now it is easy for us to write down gauge invariant variables. So you can write many gauge invariant variables using these combinations. You are given the mapping, construct any arbitrary one which you want. So the simplest one which we can think, which will first give the morning, are this phi h, which in most of the books is defined as minus of this capital psi. In Mukhanov or in Donaldson, it has a different sign probably. And this phi h we just define as phi minus h cut. This is the definition of this phi h. And now you can see that this phi h is gauge invariant, because phi h tilde is phi tilde minus h chi tilde, and I put phi tilde from here, I get phi minus ht. I put chi tilde from here, I get minus h chi plus ht, and I get a phi h. So this is our first gauge invariant paper, phi h. Now let us define another gauge invariant variable. Which is phi a, which is the second body potential, which is defined in the choice in x equal to 1 is alpha minus chi tau. Okay? So this is also the invariant because chi tilde of A is alpha tilde minus chi tilde dot. And this is equal to alpha minus chi dot from that equation. And this is equal to minus chi and then plus of chi dot. So this is also the invariant by A. Then you can write down as many gauging variables from here as they are possible. Okay, so we looked at the intrinsic curvature perturbation. So let me just conclude this lecture by one very simple observation that if we choose, so we were given this choice of foliations, right? We knew from the very beginning that these foliations are not unique. And we can choose a specific condition. So if you choose hypersurfaces such that chi is 0, like you are just taking this foliation in the spacetime in which your shear in the world lines just vanishes. This is just by construction. We take this will be our Newtonian gauge, chi equal to 0. Like we just assume that we are given a foliation in which chi is 0. Then we immediately see from phi h that phi h is phi. And from phi a that phi a is alpha. Okay? So you can choose, this will be our Newtonian gauge, we'll talk about it tomorrow in detail. So if my shear vanishes in the world lines, then the intrinsic curvature perturbation, which I wrote in terms of phi, this phi which I started with, which was one of my perturbations in the spatial part, is gauging variable by itself. I don't have to worry about any gauge transformations or coordinates and so on. I am ab initio starting with a gauging variable. Okay? Similarly, the perturbation in the lattice is a gauging variable object by itself. I don't have to worry about anything. Okay? So that is why a specific choice of gauge can really simplify your life a lot. So therefore, like in many books, if you will find, people will assume that we start with a Newtonian gauge. It will simplify your life a lot because then they know that they don't have to do any gauge transformations, they don't have to worry about any gauging variables, because somebody proved, like Alain Bardeen, that if you do this, then your phi is a gauging variant object. And if you do this, then your lattice is a gauging variant object. The perturbation of the labs. So that is why life becomes very simple if you fix a gauge and if you do the calculation. We haven't done that. We are discovering it as it was originally done in the literature. Okay, so I think we'll stop here. Tomorrow what we are going to do is the same thing for the matter part, which is very straightforward, much simpler than this. And then we will discuss various gauges. We'll discuss synchronous gauge, what it means. What we set equal to 0. We have already seen a little bit about the Newtonian or the zero shear gauge. Then we'll see the uniform expansion gauge. We'll also see uniform density gauge, co-moving gauge. We'll see all these gauges. And then we'll have, then when I continue the lectures next week, we'll write down the equations which we derived yesterday in terms of these gauging variables and in conformal time. And then we'll see how we get a particular profile in CNT by solving that. Okay? Yes.
So when you say set chi equals 0, that's not a gauge invariant equation, so
that's a gauge. That's a choice of gauge.
But if you change coordinates, you're going to ruin it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You're completely right.
Why does it help?
It helps in doing some calculations. So if you choose a particular gauge, many equations simplify. So it is a property of, we will discuss it in detail. So if you do in full generality, you have seen all the glory which we passed through.
Yeah.
But if you fix a gauge, some of the equations simplify completely.
Okay, but that doesn't make these gauge invariant variables.
These are not gauge invariant variables. What I'm saying is if you are You're completely right. If you fix a gauge,
yeah.
you don't have to worry about gauge invariant variables. Because these will be
already in a gauge.
Yes, you're already in a gauge.
Okay.
You're completely right. You have fixed the gauge. In fact, it has turned out that the invariant gauge is the one. You actually like this is a very good point which you're raising. In some of the books, what I'm saying is still actually like that.
That's really, yeah.
That is very strange. It's completely true. The point is that the Newtonian gauge, as we will see, actually is the gauge in which everything is fixed. And even then, some books write it that this is completely gauge invariant. It is gauge invariant in the sense that there is nothing left to change. Everything is completely frozen. There is no freedom left. You will see it.
Okay, so you're talking about gauge invariant, I mean your remaining gauge freedoms.
Yeah.
Which
is not
obvious.
Okay. So you should just carry on this point that we looked at these transformations, we worked them out, mm-hmm. and we constructed fully gauge invariant objects without using any gauge. What I wanted to state after that was that, okay, let us look at the first thing, this is phi minus h value, and this is phi a minus alpha minus chi. So suppose you found that, okay, and then you can say, wow, like I can take, just a second, you can say like, wow, this is great, because I can choose a foliation in which my shear disappears, then my phi is gauge invariant, is equal to the binding potential, which was gauge invariant. Okay, that is the statement. Which one was it? Yes.
So it's just that people have gotten the phrasing backwards, that the gauge invariant variables become very simple in this gauge, rather than these variables become gauge invariant.
Absolutely. That is the statement. That is the correct statement. That somebody derived the gauge invariant variables in full glory, and somebody can say, okay, like my variables are equal to this gauge invariant variables if I choose this gauge, but that doesn't mean anything, because you have fixed the gauge.
Yeah.
Okay? That is just like a convenience. But some people will just do a calculation in this gauge, particular gauge, and then they will pretend that this is gauge invariant. But that doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
Right? You will even find many papers which do that. But they are as empty as this gauge, phi equal to 0. It is just a matter of convenience. We will see tomorrow that, if you don't see tomorrow, we will see next week, that this gauge actually corresponds to fixing all freedom. You are left with nothing. If you do synchronous gauge, we will see some freedom is left, and that is why it is ambiguous. Okay? So, let us talk about it tomorrow in the game.